And please join me in welcoming our main speaker, Paula B.
That one again. I like that one. Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Paula, an alcoholic. I didn't need to do this. I just kept it right here. Hi, everybody. God, it's so good to be here. I've not been in this room in a while. So to be amongst my people, there's just something about walking into a room of other alcoholics. I'm like, I might say the F-bomb a couple times. It casually drops out of my mouth. I apologize in advance. It's just what happens when I tell the truth. And I apologize and don't apologize at the same time. Thanks for having me. Like I said, it's so good to be here. Honor and privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. And quite frankly, it's a responsibility. I have a responsibility in my sobriety to suit up and show up as I'm asked, when I'm asked. And the fact that I'm clean and sober on a Saturday night at, dare I say, 8:40, number one, is a really big deal. You know, my sobriety date is February 23rd of 2008, and you guys, like, I wasn't doing this on a Saturday night prior to February 23rd of 2008. Like, shit was bad, but I was in a blackout or peeing on people's sofas or ending up in cities that I didn't start the night previously. I mean, and we'll get into that, but like, this is where I want to be on a Saturday night. And you guys are who I want to be hanging out with. Most of you. So like I said, I have a sobriety date that's February 23rd, 2008. It's a big deal. It's a really, really big deal. Before coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to choose sobriety dates because it was a hobby. Next month, when I'm 21, when I'm 25, when I'm 30, you know, any time, but right now is a good time to get sober, right? But what that really meant was I couldn't stop drinking, right? Like, this wasn't some hobby thing I had going on. Alcoholism had me by the neck. So if I wanted to stop drinking today, which many times towards the end I absolutely did, like, please let today be the day, whether it be get sober or whether it be to not wake up, like, let today be the day, and then give it 5 minutes, give it 5 hours, something was in my hand without fail. I could not stop drinking. You know, I got sober at 21 years old, and I remember when I was new, people would say, like, God, you're so smart for getting sober so young. I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, number one, there's nothing smart about getting sober. Like, this isn't a thing of intellect or, God, Paul made a good decision. It's like, I messed up so much and couldn't stop drinking so badly that nothing short of the grace of God got me here. You know, so when I was coming into your meetings the last year or so, drunk out of my mind, normally in a blackout, usually leaving to get up and go around the corner and go drink, but I didn't come to on February 23rd of 2008 to make a smart decision. You know, like, I was given a gift. And if you're sitting here with a day of sobriety, with 14 years of sobriety, with 31 years of sobriety, this is a gift. And so it is a responsibility that I have to Alcoholics Anonymous, to the alcoholic who comes in, who needs help and doesn't yet know how to ask for it, to my parents who I used to just completely destroy on a daily basis, to the community of San Luis Obispo as a whole, who I used to put in danger on a daily basis because getting from A to B and then M drunk was a better idea than not. You know, I used to put my life at risk on a regular basis, let alone everybody else that got in my way. You know, and I have an obligation to the people in my life who have never seen me drink. You know, like, I've got this man in my life, you know, like, let me tell you, I have a responsibility to show up and hang out with you guys. Like, this is cute, but, like, I gotta do this. You know, my life is amazing. It's amazing. And it started the moment that I walked in here. And it's only gotten better because I've stayed and because I've done what is so lovingly suggested. And for this alcoholic, it came in the form of like, do it or die. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to do it. You know, this is kind of a do or die situation, not to be all like, oh my God, Paul is telling you what to do. Yeah, kind of. Like, this is. It's like we're dealing with alcoholism. This is not usually how I start my age, but this is how I'm starting the night. I'm like in a black dress, and we've got a suit here, the suit here, and I feel very business-like right now. And I'm going to tell you how it is. You know, alcoholism right now is just surrounding me. And not like this kind of surrounding. Like, this is awesome. I love sober alcoholics. Like, we are the best human beings on planet Earth. You know who I hate? Are those drunk alcoholics that just, like, come in. And I was one of them, so I can say that. Like, I am a nightmare. I am a nightmare alcoholic. And the thing is, in addition to being a nightmare, I don't care that I'm a nightmare. That's the shitty thing about alcoholism, is I got it, and when I am drunk, I don't give a shit what happens when I put alcohol in me. Not only do I not give a shit, but I also can't control what happens when I start drinking. You know, in early sobriety, I heard this guy, without fail, he'd say, well, the man takes the drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes the man. I'm like, oh my God, that's alcoholism. There it is. Like, I didn't even have to turn to the book just yet. Like, I knew who I was. And then I came in here, and you guys were talking about the steps and these lives that you got from the inside out, and you were different, and you were laughing, and you were shiny, and I was a dead, a shell of a human being, desperate for something else, but not knowing what the heck to do, and terrified to do anything to get to wherever you were. Because if I asked for help, then you might get to know me. If I asked for help, you might see how absolutely devastatingly broken I was. And let me tell you, alcohol made that reality okay. When I drank, I didn't have to think about who I was. I didn't have to think about the thing I did the night before. I didn't have to think about how many times I ended up in jail, what I said to my mom the night before, the knife I took to her. I mean, you guys, all bets are off when I drink. I'm adorable sober, and I am a nightmare when I drink. That lady is sick. A knife to her mom. Yes! Like, I take the drink, the drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes me. All bets are off. I have a responsibility, guys. Like, I have a responsibility to be here and hang out with you guys and do this on a daily basis. I don't want to forget who I am. I don't want the life that AA has given me. Allow me to forget that it was AA that gave it to me. Like, before I came into AA, I had a lot of potential. I knew inside I was a good person who did good things or could do good things, or I was like funny or charming and personable. It's like we were over there like in the corner, and all I had was the wreckage, the destruction that came into Alcoholics Anonymous with me. I envisioned, and I call it like two U-Haul trucks filled top to bottom, left to right, to shove with all the destruction, the shame, the guilt, all those things that happened as a result of my drinking, the things that I did, and then the things that happened to me, the things that I kept 20 miles minimum from my own truth. Like, that's where I like to live. And those other things, like the potential, I couldn't have. I couldn't. And it's because people like you sat across the dining room table and allowed me to start bearing my soul little by little, and I learned how to trust, and I learned what my story was, and I learned that I was going to be okay. Like, I wasn't going to be okay if I just sat in AA and just, like, expected something good to happen. I was going to be okay because I did something. Not only did I do something, it's like the AA buffet. We've got, like, the steps, and we've got sponsorship, and we've got service, and we've got, you know, all this stuff here. And we can talk about it. And we can do it. Very, very different reality. And I'm the alcoholic who goes to the AA buffet, and I don't have the luxury of being like, pass me the deviled eggs and maybe like a little bit of spinach. Like, I need the whole shit, like the whole thing, the whole AA buffet. I've got to fill my head. I've got to do it all. I'm not the person that shows up to a senior meeting once a month. I'm not the person that, like, occasionally dips my toe in the AA pool. Like I said, like, I understand who I am and what I need to do about it. And so here I am hanging out with you guys on a Saturday night. And He said it wasn't like this before. You know, I'm the alcoholic, or prior to even knowing that I was an alcoholic, I was a kid who grew up in an alcoholic home who hated alcohol. You know, we heard that so beautifully described, and my household wasn't like that, but it was like that. You know, it may have not looked like that, but it felt like that, and it was filled with secrets. And what I learned from a very, very young age was we don't talk about what's going on. We don't share about our feelings. Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to wake up the next day, and we're going to just ignore all the shit that happened the night before. Yeah, mom blacking out, making you all feel like your life is in danger. We're just going to, like, pretend. And when you walk into the kitchen and mom's making breakfast and you really want some sort of explanation or, like, a sorry, no, you just sit at the table and you just let her give you eggs, and then we just move on with our life. Like, these are the tools that I picked up at a young age, which I took into my adolescence and beautifully took into my 20s, which is a really huge toolbox to have in your 20s, when you don't know what the heck to do and what to say and how to have relationships. Like, that's what I was like when I got sober. But anyway, those things, mind you, don't make me alcoholic. They just make me an apt to know how to live life on life's terms. But my point is that life was very, very scary, unpredictable. But it was also, like, fun and at times free. And, you know, I also had loving parents. And I played school and played sports and was good at school. And, you know, before I started drinking, I traveled all over the nation playing basketball. I had a gift. Like, I was very gifted. And this path was so beautifully paved for me. And all I had to do was just walk down it. College. You can go to any college you want for basketball. Super duper. Just keep practicing, keep doing this, and there it is. You know, so I had a life. All I had to do was just keep doing it. And by the time I got into high school, there were things that had happened at home and in middle school that completely immobilized me and shut me down as a human being. And when alcohol entered my life, it saved me. You know, as a freshman in high school, I started going to parties. I was the starting point guard on the varsity basketball team. So I had this life. And then I wanted to be cool because all of a sudden fitting in was the most important thing for a 14, almost 15-year-old gal, right? So I started going to parties. And goodness gracious, going to parties and not drinking can only last so long when you want to fit in, you know? So I went to enough parties and, you know, eventually it happened, right? I was at Carrie Morrison's house. It was a Friday night after the football game. There were seven of us. I mean, I remember it as vividly as I remember the coffee I drank on the way here to the meeting. I just remember it. It was magical. We were all kind of sitting in a circle, and the bottle of pawpaw came around, and I was like, no thanks. And then it went around again, and I was like, no thanks. And then it came around again, and it was on. Like, I didn't even think about it. It just went to my lips. And down it went. And holy moly, the magic happened. What happened in my childhood at home, what happened in middle school, God, like all that stuff that just immobilized me, made me afraid of you and the world, was gone. And it was quiet. And I was free. I was absolutely free. And it was fun. Like, that night was everything and then some that I could have just dreamed of. I was free. It was fun. I didn't care what you thought about me. I wasn't insecure. I wasn't in my head. Nothing mattered. That night was so much foreshadowed the next 7 years of my life and my drinking. Like, I kissed him. I kissed her. I got blackout drunk. I threw up. I probably woke up in a bush. Like, I don't know. Like, all the good stuff accompanied that first night of drinking. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And that next morning, I eventually made it back to my house, and I kind of sauntered in at about 6:15 in the morning, and who I was the day before exited the building, and this new person was there all of a sudden. And I walked into the front door, and there were my parents at the top of the staircase, and they looked at me, and I knew that they'd been crying all night, and I knew they hadn't slept at all, and I didn't care. And they asked me where I'd been, and what I told them was, "Fuck you, leave me alone, I'm fine." And I went downstairs in my room, and I proceeded to probably fall asleep. Sports, school, being a good person, being a good friend, being loyal, being generous, being caring, being present. All those things went right out the window the moment I started drinking. And I didn't know that. I still looked at myself and thought of myself as like a really good person who did really good things in school and, you know, played with a smart athlete. But I started showing up for school drunk. I started showing up for practice hungover, eventually drunk. I started doing things that never in a million years I would ever think that I would do. But like I said, once I started drinking, all that stuff became secondary to status. And alcohol became the most important thing in my life. I remember being in the middle of the basketball game. Basketball was my saving grace. It was my everything. And all of a sudden, I'm in the middle of a game, and I'm looking up into the stands on a Friday night, and all I'm consumed with is obsession of the mind, right? All I'm consumed with is who's going to get me alcohol, where are we going to drink, what's it going to be like? You know, and it's like right before halftime, I was obsessed out the gate. And I wouldn't have told you that, or an alcoholic would say something like that, and I didn't even understand alcoholism. But that's what I thought, and that's how I felt right out the gate. And that's what happened for the next 3 years of high school. I became that girl. And if you're that girl, which I'm sure you were, it's not a fun role to play. You know, I'd walk into a party and the eyes were on me and the judgment set in just like that. Like, oh God, Paul is here, you know? That didn't exist 3 months prior to me drinking, you know? But I was a liability all of a sudden. And all I wanted to do was just be a party girl and just fit in and make this work. Let me just have this identity where you liked me and you accepted me and I was free and let me make this magical equation work. Please let it work. And I couldn't even go to a party and feel comfortable. So then I just pre-party and then show up. I didn't give a shit what you thought about me by the time I got to the party. Nothing mattered. Nothing mattered at all. But it was that look that just killed me. It just killed me. I mean, I do things like come to the next morning, somehow in my bedroom, with a cell phone. Not like this thing, but like those little flippy flip things. And I'm just like, oh my God, what did I do? And I don't even want to look at my text messages. And I don't want to know what happened because if I know, then I have to look at who I am. So I just quickly delete everything and then put it in the corner and just move on with my life. You know, like I said, I like to be 20 miles minimum from my own reality. Somehow I graduated high school and I went up to Sonoma State. And for somebody that grew up in Los Osos, that felt like a really, really big move. You know, it was like 5 hours north of where I grew up. But I needed to go, you know. I was done with this place. I needed a fresh start. I just need to move on. And I got up there. A couple weeks before I was in school, there's something called the Paso Fair. Some of you might also be familiar with that. The Paso Fair. So my parents had gotten a couple friends and I front row tickets to my favorite band at the time, Maroon 5, for all of you Maroon 5 fans. And a hotel room, as any good enabling parents would, with their, you know, tornado teenage daughter. And so we got a couple bottles and we drank before the concert, and I got my first drunk in public. And I didn't even get to the concert, you know? I just remember, like, tripping and falling and looking down, like, oh my God, there's sweat on me. And then I woke up the next day in jail, you know? And I remember, like, if I just had eaten more beforehand, you know? If only I was with different people. Kayla, she's the liability. She's the one with the big issues, you know? I can't believe they got me. Everybody drinks at the Paso Fair. You know, I just had all this rationalizing and justifying why it happened. And it had nothing to do with alcohol. Wrong place, wrong time. They were out to get me. Dang it, one more cheeseburger. We would have been fine. You know, I'm not trying to solve my drinking problem. I'm trying to find the right mix, the right combination of things so that this shit doesn't happen anymore. Right? I like to deflect a lot. That's alcoholism at its core right there. So I got my first drunk in public, and everybody gets drunk in public at the Paso Fair. So I didn't think much about it. But I went up to Sonoma State, and within the 3 weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks that I was there, I broke my hand the first night I was there. I had surgery a few days later. I got my first DUI, my second drunk in public. I was kicked out of the dorm and put into my own individual dorm with my own RA. And I am now, you know, I'm 18, almost 19 years old. Guys, fresh though. It's going well, by the way. Fresh start. Like, I just need to start new. And I'm already drinking around the clock. Like, I've got this fresh start, and the way that I'm dealing with this whole fresh start thing is that I'm pre-drinking before we go to Subway. You know? Like, oh, we're going to go watch a movie. Like, I'm going to get blackout drunk before we go to the movie. You know? And so I came to one morning in the Santa Rosa Hospital, and I'm connected to, you know, IVs and whatnot, and, you know, and that could have been one of those moments, right? One of those moments where I looked at myself and my reality and asked that question of, like, oh my God, what am I doing, right? And none of that came to me. In that moment of what should have been desperation, I got up, disconnected myself from the IVs, and in my gown and booties, hitchhiked back to Sonoma State. Some guy on red shorts picked me up, God love him, and dropped me off at my dorm. And there I was again, drinking vodka as if nothing had happened the night before. And that's how small my world got. Wrong combination, guys. Officer Maggie was out to get me, that bitch. Right? She has arrested me 3 times within a 2-week period. And that wasn't my fault, right? So I got kicked out of school right after that. And what they call a liability, I'm a liability. You know, I put myself in harm and I put everybody else around me in harm. And they kicked me out. And I remember just getting home back in Los Osos. And I read this letter from the dean of Sonoma State that said, "Dear Ms. Boucher, don't ever come back here again. Love the dean of Sonoma State." And I was just like, how dare you, you know? And alcoholism was alive and well, obviously, in my life at that point. And the Facebook describes it much more eloquently than I'm going to right now. But I can tell you what was going on right there is that I did not differentiate right from wrong, good from bad. I was not living on planet Earth with the rest of you. Definitely with the rest of you. But not with the rest of the people out there. Like, I was in my own thing, my own world, doing my own thing. And if I had an idea, I knew it was a good idea, and I executed it immediately. That's how I did my life. And so when I got that letter, probably within a few days, I broke into my parents' house that they had locked me out of because, again, I'm a liability, and I broke into their house through a window, shattered everything, and took the keys that I had just lost the privilege of driving. And took my car back up to Sonoma State to hang out with my friends, you know, like they missed me or something. And these people didn't want anything to do with me. Quite frankly, they didn't probably even know me. And I drove back up there, and all I was to all of them was a car and a debit card, you know. And I pulled in, and somebody gave me a beer, and boop, within 15 seconds, there's Officer Maggie. And I get arrested for trespassing and drunk in public. And I tell you guys, it wasn't my fault. Like, it was not my fault. And, I mean, it never was, but it certainly wasn't that time. You know, the next few years of my life and my drinking was just my world getting much smaller and much smaller by the day. And I'm over here, like, trying to make it work, trying to convince you that I'm okay and it's okay and that everything is fine and let me just get this job so I can just show you and show myself that I've got it under control and then I'm going to start drinking again. But I'm trying to make it work. You know, I'm the employee that I could easily get the job. I could easily get the job. I'm personable, plenty of cow, put me in coach, you know, like I can get it. The thing is, the follow-through is not what I'm really good at. Like, I'm the employee that will show up drunk. I will leave at lunch and not come back. I will tell you that I have a UTI just so I can run to the bathroom every 15 minutes just so I can drink. Like, I didn't even think about how weird that sounded. But if it meant I was going to drink, I didn't really care what I told you. You know, I applied for and got a job I thought it was a receptionist, but it was the cashier, which I equated to a receptionist, but it wasn't, at Jiffy Lube. And I know you're shocked. And then I look like the type of gal that would know a lot about cars and knows a lot about work boots, but that's not me. So I get this job and I show up on my first day and they give me a pair of boots and they give me like the jumpsuit and I'm just like, okay, all right, here we go. You know, and there he was. There he was, you know. We got together day one. He was 22, that's all that matters. And, you know, and I'm 19 at the time. So really, that's all that matters. But he also really liked me and he thought I was cute. And he just wanted to spend all his time with him. And I hated myself for spending all his time with me. I hated myself so much at this time that's all that matters. You know, and so my life was consumed by alcoholism, and then my life was consumed with an abusive relationship. And this relationship took me to places that that alcohol, I know, eventually, you know, would get me or didn't get me. They just went hand in hand, you know. My kicker is off. My self-esteem is diminished. I find myself in compromised situations that I otherwise might not. But my life was at risk on a daily basis, and that's how small my world got. And one night, or the next morning rather, he went to jail for attempted murder, and I went to rehab. Attempted murder on me, and I went to rehab. And God, I needed a vacation at that time, you know? I remember going to the little interview for rehab. And I just remember my parents were like, yeah, this is great. So you're saying if we pay for 3 months, then we get the fourth free. They love a good deal. So I was in it for 4 months. And I think I got kicked out after about 2.5. Something about staying sober in rehab was important. I remember this guy, he was a Hollywood producer. I only hung out with the finest folk in rehab. And he was talking about how the youngsters in Hollywood were drinking things like lemon and vanilla extract. I was like, ding! You know, I'm not 21, so that kind of shit is really important. That's important information for me, even in rehab. And after maybe a month of being there, they do things like, hey, we're going to have a Wednesday shopping day, so we're going to give you the freedom to go to a shopping center where there's a grocery store and a tanning salon and a retail boutique. And I was like, oh, perfect, Ralph's is there. So I found myself in the baking aisle and buying whatever had the highest content of alcohol, lemon and peppermint, and I just put it in my bag and I went back to rehab and I drank both of those because why would you not when you were in rehab? And that's how small my world was. You know, I'm in rehab and I don't even know why I'm there. I don't even understand why I'm in rehab, and yet I'm going to any length to just get out of my mind drunk because I couldn't handle life on my own. I can't handle existing in my own skin for 5 minutes. I can't do it. I need something to make things okay. And not that did, but it did, you know? And so I got kicked out, imagine that, eventually, and I came back home, you know? And by that time, you know, alcoholism had me by the neck, right? I was about 20 years old, and, I'd been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I have the alcoholic accessories. I've got the arrest, got a couple DUIs, some drunken publics under my belt. That kind of trespassing. None of those things actually make me alcoholic. They just account for pretty low points in my story, you know? So I've got court cards. I've got lots of court cards. So I've been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know I'm not like you. I mean, the way that alcoholism works, I could be in this room tonight, one grateful alcoholic, and walk in here and be like, nope, I don't look like you, I don't sound like you. Alcoholism just wants me to just take the truth and throw it out the window, you know? That's how my alcoholism works. So I've got these court cards and I'm going to meetings to get them filled out, and then I get kicked out of rehab, and then I'm like, well, nobody else wants to spend time with me, so I'll start going to these meetings again. And what happened after rehab is that I couldn't stay sober. Something shifted. I couldn't stay sober before, mind you, but now it got to a point where I didn't want to drink and I could not. I don't know what that was, but it was like sheer torture, you know? When you want to stop drinking, you absolutely cannot, no ifs, ands, buts about it. That's terrifying. And I existed in Alcoholics Anonymous for a couple of years, mostly drunk, as I said at the beginning. Desperate, absolutely hopeless, and convinced that I was never going to be doing this. But definitely not this, but this that you guys are doing here tonight. I remember a few months before I got sober, I was sitting in a meeting, it was a young people's meeting on a Monday night, and that was a place that I frequented often, and God, maybe within 10 minutes, like, I couldn't sit through a meeting. I couldn't do it. I couldn't sit there long enough, and I had to exit the back door, go around to the liquor store that was just, you know, steps away, bought a 40, pounded it in their bathroom just so I could sit in a meeting for an hour. And that's where alcoholism took me, you know. Before I moved down to Orange County, where I ended up getting sober, you know, I'm blacking out in your meetings. I'm passing out in your meetings, you know. And now I'm ashamed. Like, I can't even come here. Not because you guys don't accept me. You get me. But I can't look at myself. I can't show up one more time at your meeting acknowledging who I am. This thing is just riddled with fear, this disease of alcoholism. Fear, shame, and guilt. And there I was. You know, and so I moved down to Orange County to get into sober living, and I did. I was living in Laguna Niguel, and it wasn't about getting sober because it couldn't be. I couldn't stop drinking. I just couldn't face my life one more moment here in this area. And so what happened for me is I was living down there for a couple weeks, and I had my last brilliant plan, well not last, but last at that time brilliant plan, and it was to basically manipulate my parents to buy me a train ticket to come up for the weekend. You know, I'd been there for 2 or 3 weeks. Of course they missed me. So they got me a train ticket for like a weekend away. And I got on the train that Friday night, and my plan was to go to the speaker meeting on Friday night to go win back my ex-boyfriend who was getting a 2-year chip at what's now the Frederick speaker meeting but was previously the Sierra Vista speaker meeting. You know? So that's my plan. And this guy, mind you, wants nothing to do with me. The last time he saw me was on New Year's Eve. I had New Year's Eve shindig in Morro Bay, and I was passed out on the curb, and I just remember like coming to and looking up, and him and his 6-year-old daughter at the time were standing above me and just looking at me like, oh my God, you know, I did that to people on a regular basis. I don't know. So this guy wanted nothing to do with me, but I'm going to win him back. And so I get on the train, and the plan, I had just turned 21 the month before, my plan was just to have a beer, just one beer. And here's alcoholism to a T. One beer led to two led to three led to Bloody Mary. Now I'm drinking with everybody around me on the train. The conductor's buying me alcohol. Same dance, different day. You know, passed out, blacked out, lost all my stuff that I came onto the train with. There it was again, you know. And what happened for me is we pulled into the train station and Sam was just there. My parents are there to pick up their sober daughter for a sober weekend together. And I'm in a blackout. And all I remember was stumbling off the train and coming to, and just this moment of sober clarity where I looked up and there they were, you know, and the look on their faces of, oh my God, what are we going to do with you? You know, and that wasn't a foreign look for me. I got that look each time I drank, whether it be a friend, a parent, my lawyer, the judge, the mailman, fill in the blank. Like, that is a look that I was very, very familiar with. And yet that was my moment. And I knew in that moment exactly who I was and what I needed to do about it. And back into the blackout I went. And I came to that next morning in my childhood bedroom. and that need to drink from the inside out was gone, and I haven't had a drink since. You know, and I say need, I put emphasis on need, because that was my reality. If I didn't have a drink in me, I shook like a leaf, I thought like a crazy person, I saw things that didn't exist, and that's where alcohol took me. That's where alcohol took me. And so I got back on the train and got back to Orange County, and those people were done with me. And let me tell you, those people loved me to death, and they absolutely would have, and they were done. The only two people that had any ounce of belief in me, like my mom, she's so loving. Like she like would sprinkle her house. She sprinkled her house with like belief all over the place because she just needed to hold on to any hope that things were going to be okay, and they weren't. You know, these people, towards the end of my drinking, were babysitting their adult child because I was alcoholic. They couldn't trust what was going to happen. You know, mom would take the, these people worked. You know, they had obligations and responsibilities. And every day, my mom would take the first half of the day and be home with me, like a babysitter. And my dad would take the second half, and then the next day, they would reverse roles. That's what the disease of alcoholism does to other people, you know? And I'm so self-centered on myself. I'm like, my drinking's not affecting anybody. Anybody. You know? And thank God for clarity. Thank God I stuck around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to find out who I was, what had happened, and what I need to do to ensure that shit doesn't happen anymore. Because for me to drink today is unacceptable for so many reasons. So many reasons for me. So I got back to Orange County, and I like to say I just jumped into AA with both feet. There's the AA pool. Paula jumped in. Backflip off the diving board. No, I didn't understand I had alcoholism. Like, I understood I had a drinking problem, and all of a sudden I didn't want to drink. But I hadn't opened the book to understand what alcoholism was. Is there any takeaway from that for somebody, maybe like myself, who came into AA and had the desire to drink lifted and wasn't drinking, but was just sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just existing like I was those first few months? Just seeing on this part. I've been sober for about 4 months, and I went to AA meetings. Boy, did I go to AA meetings. I'm like the poster child for AA. I'm not doing shit, but look at Paula, you know, like, she's the cheerleading fool for AA. God, I'm so grateful. I don't want to drink. And, you know, I just, like, prance around meetings down in Orange County, sitting on old men's laps, just think I'm cute as can be. Nothing had changed. But I just wasn't drinking. You know, there was this meeting down in Orange County, probably still is in existence, it's called the Sober Horse Thief. And it's, what do you get when you sober up a drunk horse thief? You get a sober horse thief. You know? So Paula, this destructive, lying, cheating, thieving, alcoholic gal. You take the alcohol away, and what do you get? A sober, lying, manipulative son of a bitch. You know, like, I've got untreated alcoholism, but I don't know it. I'm just the same person going about my business, doing the same stuff. But dang it, now alcohol can't make those feelings go away. There's no excuse for why I was a dick. There's no excuse for why I'm yelling at my mom. There's no excuse for why I'm sitting on old mental. I don't know. Like, I'm just doing it, and I'm miserable. I'm miserable. And so I find my way back in Los Osos at about 6 months sober, and I'm sitting in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've got untreated alcoholism, and I don't know it. I don't know it, but I'm absolutely miserable. And you guys have given me numbers. You've told me you'll be my sponsor. You've asked me to go hang out. You've done all the stuff that AA does. And I've done the thing that newcomers do of, yeah, I'll do it in 5 minutes before temple. Yeah, I'll be there. Oh, shoot, my car broke down. You know? Oh, my gosh, I'm really sick. You know? I've done all that shit. And I get it from sponsors. I'm like, all right, girl, do it. You know? So I get it. You know? So I found myself on a Thursday morning, I woke up in excruciating pain from untreated alcoholism. And I hit my knees that morning, and I did something that I had never done before. And that was pray a sincere prayer. Not that God help me, I'll never do it again. If you just get me out of this, I'm in jail. Please, I'll never drink and drive again. I'll be a good girl. I'll blah, 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 blah. Make this pain go away. It was, God, please help me. I can't do this anymore. I stood at the turning point. You know, I didn't know that's what was happening. but I did it. I asked for help, and I picked up the phone, and I had just been given a woman's phone number that I'd never even met her, and I called her in that moment, and I met with her that afternoon, and the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous opened, and then I've been here, planted firmly ever since. You know, and I didn't know that I took a third step that morning. I had no idea. You know, Paula goes left. She's very good at going left. She's very deliberate about going left. Don't help me try to go right. I absolutely don't need you. And I don't need to go right, quite frankly. And that morning, I made a decision to do things differently. I asked for help, and the difference is I followed through. The thing with alcoholics is we know how to ask for help. Again, we're riddled with fear, we're selfish, self-centered at our core. Please help me. Please help me. 3 days later, never hear from them again. You know, the difference today is that I asked for help, and I actually, you know, so that's what happened that morning. And AA was there to just, with open arms, welcome me, as he did before, but all of a sudden I was there to receive it. And I started meeting with that woman on a weekly basis, and she took me to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're new here, I really welcome you. And I want you to know that speaker meetings are great. Young people's meetings are great. Young people's events are great. The 4th of July barbecue is awesome. Like, that Winston at men's group is the bomb. I don't know. But, you know, like, meetings are awesome. But don't confuse that for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This right here is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is where I found myself. This is where I found in the doctor's opinion. This is where I found in black and white who I was. This is where I read about the phenomenon of craving. I didn't understand who the heck I was. I just had a drinking problem. And then I realized I didn't just drink poorly with bad consequences just because. I drank differently than the average bear. I am different. And it is never, ever going to be different. It's never going to be different. And until I was able to accept that reality and gain some humility, let me tell you, I'd be out right now screwing things up because I've got things to do. I've got better thinking. I've got better plans. So this book and steps have relieved me of the bondage of self, not only from alcoholism, but from me. You know, I wake up every day and I'm still alcoholic. I might not have a drink in my hand, but I'm just as alcoholic today as I was on February 22nd of 2008 when I had one really good plan. I'm just as alcoholic. You know, I stand up here from the podium and I tell you this brilliant story and oh my gosh, it's a miracle. Yes, it's a freaking miracle. And what happened in February of 08 is not, that's not the magic. The magic is a day at a time because of that gift I was given. I suit up and I show up and I keep believing in what we do here. You know, this thing is transformative. It's absolutely transformative. You know, that third step, you know, it's basically, yes, Paula, there's a power greater than yourself that will restore your sanity. It's not you. Get the heck out of your own way and let God's will happen. Okay, yeah, I can do that. But I can do the third step. But if I'm not living the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'm not in what that third step describes, I'm going to miss it. I don't know what I'm going to miss, but I'm going to miss it. And in September of 2013, I was at home, and my phone rang, and it was about 8:30 at night, and I knew who it was going to be. I knew it, and I didn't want to look, and I didn't want to answer it. I didn't want to hear on the other end of the phone my brother telling me one more time the brilliant life that he was living and the screenplay that he was going to write and everything that he was just dreaming about from his sofa as he's shooting himself to death with a cigarette in his hand and burns all over the sofa. I didn't want to hear it. My heart broke as a result of alcoholism. Not only my own alcoholism, but watching somebody that I dearly love go through it. And early on in sobriety, somebody told me, actually I think it was my sponsor, she said, Paula, we carry the message, we don't carry the alcohol. Okay, not even with my brother? No, not even with my daughter. You know, this is a program of extraction rather than promotion. Just because Paula got sober doesn't mean the whole world needs to go get sober and know how I get it. That is a precious gift that I hold right here. And when I need to, I share it accordingly. So my phone's ringing that night, and I don't want to answer because I know what's going to happen. I know what he's going to say, and I can't handle it one more time. And then that goddamn responsibility prayer kicks in because, like, my feet are firmly planted here, guys. I am responsible. When an alcoholic reaches for help, this hand has to be out there reaching back, whether it be a newcomer or whatever. So I do what we do. And I answer the phone, and there he was, sobbing hysterically, hitting his bottom. And I didn't know he was hitting his bottom. But I answered that phone, and he was sobbing, and he was asking for help, and he was saying the things that I said when I got sober. I can't do this anymore. Please help me. And I did what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. I didn't go down there and say them. I didn't put them on my car and say, we're going to do this. Let's go to a meeting. I gave them a number of a man in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got the hell out of the way. And I didn't know that he was going to call. I didn't know that he was going to show up to his first AA meeting that next day. But that's that. And he's been sober ever since. That's Alcoholics Anonymous right there. Right there. And I could have missed it. I could think about everything that I've gone through in my sobriety, everything that has happened as a result of turning my will and my life over to care of my higher power, and just letting this shit just happen. You know? I don't have to control the show anymore. I don't have to be a selfish, self-centered, what am I going to get from this relationship anymore. You know? My living in madness today with my parents is, I love you, how can I show up for you? You know, it's not about me telling them what they're saying and what they're doing wrong. Quite frankly, that doesn't even come to my mind anymore. The moment that I was given the gift of just being able to show up as a loving participant in my life and the lives of others, to suit up and show up and be of service to not only the alcoholics here and Alcoholics Anonymous, but those people in my life that so desperately need me to do that, like, there is a happiness, joyfulness, and freedom attached to that. It's amazing. And if you're new here, they said I really welcome you. And if I could talk for another 17 hours about everything that transpired in the last 14 years of my life, I probably still wouldn't have enough time to do it. What I can tell you is that I wake up on a daily basis and I don't want to die. I wake up on a daily basis and I want to be sober. And quite frankly, I'm really happy about it. When somebody asks me to speak at a speaker meeting on a Saturday night, maybe my first thought is, oh my God, it's really late. But my second thought is, absolutely, this is a gift. And my job is to show up every day because I know that I have a daily reprieve. I don't have a lifetime reprieve. I've got a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And it's just today. It's just today. And I'm so glad that I know that. I'm going to end with this. When I was about 5 years sober, actually it was 5 years sober, it was probably 5 years to the day, one of my dear friends, David P., has been sober a long, long time, just this big presence in hospitals and institutions. And if you're new or if you're wondering how to be a sober, we've got service opportunities galore. You don't have to have 5 years sober to go in. We've got opportunities galore, and I'm happy to talk with you about that afterwards. But 5 years sober, and after our home group on Saturday morning, he came up to me and he gave me the application. I looked at it, I was like, what is this? And his application to go in CMC, the California Men's Colony. I'm just like, excuse me, you have the wrong person. You know, like, I'm 26 years old, I've got nothing in common. Like, what am I going to get them? Okay. So I do the okay thanks, and I fill it out, and I send it back to him immediately. And then I think, okay, great, that's that. And then as soon as it was processed, my phone rings, and it was probably right on the moment that it did process, and he calls me and he says, okay, kid, we're going in this Friday. What? You know, I have no business being there. What am I going to tell them? What am I going to, you know? And I'm terrified. And I pulled into the parking lot, and I walked up to the first set of doors, and then I walked through the second set of doors, and my heart's racing. And I go through the third set of doors, and then after the fourth, we walked up to the meeting. And it was just like tonight. There were men five men in blue out there reaching their hands out to us, welcoming us. You know? And that feeling, that fear, that what do I have to give, was gone. Because they are me and I am them. What binds us together is the disease of alcoholism. And what further solidifies that is what we have here. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I walk into that room and there's 200-300 men in blue, and we're talking about recovery. Nothing separates them from me and vice versa. Inches and seconds. Inches and seconds. I've got two DUIs. I used to make the conscious-ish decision on a daily basis to put myself behind the steering wheel and put other people's lives in danger. My second DUI was on a main street in Los Osos that I see moms, you know, showing their children. Inches and seconds. Like, the fact that is not me behind doors and people like you aren't visiting me, I don't take that lightly. So I'm in that room with all those guys, and it's been a gift, an absolute gift to be able to do that for the last 9 years of my sobriety, and it's been a little funky, obviously, over the last couple of years, but we're going back, you know? And that night, I was overcome with so much gratitude by what was reflected in the life and the shares and the eyes of the men that stood in front of me who were full of hope. And where do you get that, right? Where do you get that? That's Alcoholics Anonymous. And that night I was profoundly aware of the fact that I am them and they are me. And I share that every time I'm with them. And I've been honored to experience men coming out after being in 30, 40 years and meeting them in my home group the day after they get out. And loving each other because that's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there's no reason why I should be here clean, sober, and happy about it. But I am. And I don't want to let that go for anything. So if you're new, stay. If you can even get 5% of what I've gotten here, my God, your life is going to transform. You know, I've got the disease of alcoholism that wants to just keep me 20 miles minimum from the truth, but it just rips apart my life and everybody else's around me, right? And then Alcoholics Anonymous is what puts that back together. I'm so grateful for you all. Love you, thank you.
Another big round of applause for Paula.